Keon, good to have you back, man. It's the strangest thing, no pun intended, because the new season of Stranger Things dropped yesterday, but, like, you were, like, one of the only guests on Cult Scenario Chat that whenever I have you on, or when it's time to have you on, like, my internet inexplicably goes out. You're, like, one of the only guests this happens for. Yesterday we had an appointment to get together and chat, but my internet went out, and I had no signal. This has happened before, at least one or two other times. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the universe objecting.
I think that's Florentino cutting the circuit.
That's right.
To make sure that I don't say anything that I'm not supposed to say on an Atletico podcast.
That's exactly
probably,
right.
Probably praise Marcos Llorente too much. He makes sure to tap out. He didn't know we had a secret backup phone to reorganize the podcast. As soon as we better go quick before the wire gets cut again.
Yeah, we got to speed this up. We got to dive right in. So, Keon, I had you on about 2 weeks ago at this point, and a lot has happened in those 2 weeks, as we kind of thought it would. More from Atletico's end than on Real Madrid's end in terms of the incomings, outgoings. But I do want to get your view on what has happened on the other side of the Capitol this summer. We talked a little bit about it last time you were on, but mostly through the prism of Marcos Llorente coming in and Rodrigo Hernandez going out. I'm no longer referring to him as Rodri. He doesn't play for Atletico anymore. So he's now gone to Manchester City. But the purpose of this, I think, will be for both of our clubs here to figure out what all these signings mean, how they're all going to fit in, how much these teams are going to improve based off them. I guess we can start with this. It's been super exciting. It's been very exciting. There's a lot of money that's been splashed around this summer. Has it been as hectic for you to follow as it has been for me?
It's probably been about the same. Like, for me, it was that initial 1 to 2 week surge, whatever it was, the four signings. Then it kind of cooled down a little bit. Then a lot of speculation and a lot of just time to analyze, watch the under-21s play, watch some international football, write some other stuff. For you, it was probably like a lot of it. I mean, this week, the João Felix thing. What was it, yesterday that it was announced officially? But kind of also a lot of build-up heading into it of like what would happen, whether they would pay the amount that Benfica wants. And then also just kind of waiting for Griezmann also, like what happens there. And still, like, that Griezmann thing is still kind of weird to me. I'm not sure how to make sense of it. Maybe you can make sense of it better than I can, but I just still understand that, you know, how quickly and promptly he put out that video that he was leaving, and then it's July 5th and still no indication. I'd assume in situations like that they just know right away where they're going, because they're not going to be in limbo. And I assume that was true. It's just that for whatever reason we don't have anything official yet. So I'm just kind of curious to see what happens there. I think I'm 99% sure I know that he's going to Barca, but I'm confused about the lack of the announcement so far. I don't understand.
Yeah, he's about 99% sure to go to Barca. But the latest on this actually is that yesterday reports emerged that Griezmann had signed for Barca on March 11th, which was the day before Juve knocked Atleti out in the Champions League. I think that's just purely a coincidence, but it's worth noting. He apparently signed a five-year contract on March 11th, and Atleti's president came out yesterday and said, well, if that's the case, Barca would have to stump up his full release clause, because it dropped to 120 million on July 1st. But his insistence is that if Barca signed him in March, when his release clause was still 200 million, that's the fee that's going to have to be paid. So it doesn't look like this is really all that close to completion. It is also worth noting that Atletico are trying to get Nelson Semedo as part of the deal for Griezmann, and this could be part of that larger negotiating tactic. So it seems like there's still a few more bends in the road before this gets done. It's getting annoying, but Atleti have already signed a replacement. They've already given away Griezmann's shirt number, so he's gone. It's just really a matter of when.
Well, if they get Semedo, that allows Barca to... Barca were looking at a right back I saw yesterday. I don't remember who it was now. And then I was like, why would they be looking at that player? But if they're going to let Semedo go, that would make more sense to me. What a world we live in where Griezmann can just sign a contract with another team while he's under contract and then publicly admit it, and there's like no punishment for it. Like, he can just do whatever he wants. I guess it's not the NBA, so I guess you can do it. I mean, it seems to be happening in the NBA anyway. But like, if that's the case, it's weird to me that he would publicly admit that. Like, why just not say anything? Now you make it more complicated, which is great for me as a Madridista watching, because I'm like, you know, whatever drives every penny up for Barca, you know, I'm in, sign me up. But the fact that now, I just think my dream scenario, which would never happen, would for this to all just collapse, and then Griezmann just awkwardly comes back, but then they're like, actually, we can't afford you now because we bought Joao Felix, so you're gonna have to find somewhere, maybe like go to PSG or something. Just everything, the way it was handled was weird to me.
It's been just incredibly strange, and really one big mess. The move, yeah, it has to get done, right? It has to. Griezmann, yeah, cannot come back now.
It's like past the point of no return.
Way past that. As soon as he put out that video in the middle of May, this was past the point of no return. And now it's, you know, 6-7 weeks later, and we still have no firm resolution. Even though he basically has signed for Barca, the deal isn't done yet, and who knows how many turns it could take. Yeah, it's weird. It's very strange, but unlike past years, Griezmann's situation hasn't dominated Atletico's summer. João Félix has dominated the headlines, and he has dominated Atleti's plans, and really, he's not controlled, but he's been on top of the market. He is now the third most expensive signing in the history of football.
Crazy.
Yeah, and Atletico are paying for him. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thought? This was a
That's it, right? Simeone can't complain anymore about not having a budget.
Oh my god.
Someone pointed out to me that it was João Félix is more expensive than anyone Real has ever bought. And I was like, I knew that already just by looking at the people, but when it was worded it that way, it totally like flipped the way I thought about it. Like, wow, that's actually a crazy way to put it. Given that this guy is not Cristiano Ronaldo, it's not Eden Hazard, he's not Zinedine Zidane. Actually, he's a kid who has, what, 6 months of sample size? I was thinking about this, and to me, like, if you told me I had to go replace Griezmann with João Félix, I'd be like, that's great. I actually would be like, I think that's really smart. Young, one of the most promising young players in the world, clearly very talented. Some of his, like, you know, aesthetically, he's a very smooth footballer, which I always enjoy. I always add bonus points to people who are actually can smooth and they have absurd technical ability. But also, what's the risk factor is also crazy too. If you look at just for the price alone, in a vacuum, he's a great signing. But if you look at the price, it's you better hope that it works out, because you can't flip him. Like, that's a sunk cost if he's just not good, because you're never going to make a profit off of that fee. So I guess I hope for your sake that that was sample size was real.
I also think too.
Jeremy, I think you'll see João Félix. It's possible that he'll struggle for like the first 6 months to a year, and I think that I almost would, as absurd as it says, as it sounds, you know, given his price tag and the pressure on his shoulders now. But I think if Atletico fans and the media can be just okay with him not being great next year and just letting be patient with him, you know, then maybe he'll have like an underwhelming first year and then like kind of bounce into it the second year and get better. It's a lot of pressure on that kid's shoulders right now.
Yeah, that segues into the first question, the first Twitter question we got from @AmoraMoreira. Which one will adjust, Simeone's tactics to cater João Félix or the other way around, and how long will this adjustment be? And I agree with that. I think it's going to be a year. We got to remember, despite all the money being thrown around and despite all the excitement from an Atletico point of view, this is going to be a transitional season. Half the team is gone. You just don't replace them all in one summer and everything clicks. That's just not how that works. And Simeone, we know, is not really going to change. He's kind of wedded to his style, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. He could do a few tweaks here and there, but by and large, this is how Atleti are going to play. And I think João Félix is more likely than not going to slot into that second striker role. And whether he is allowed to go crazy or not remains to be seen. He signed a 7-year contract with a 300 million euro release clause, so Atleti are going to be patient with him. In a sense, they have no choice because of the money they paid for him. but they're going to be patient. I think there is more than a passing sense that this is a transitional year. This is going to be not necessarily a bounce back year, but this is going to be the start of yet another new project, and patience is going to be required.
When you think about it this way, Simeone's way of adjusting towards Griezmann, adjusting his tactics towards Griezmann, his way of doing that, Griezmann a far better player, by the way, his way of doing that was to ask Griezmann to play very defensive, to slow down counterattacks, and not really be himself, like anywhere close to his unchained France self, for example. And still, Griezmann was incredible. So it's hard for me to see much changing for João Felix in that scenario. And like, you know, to your point, like what you said at the end there about like, this is a transition year. I think it is, but I also think like, it's one of those years where it's kind of, it also has a high ceiling, right? Because if all these signings work out, which, you know, the signings have been pretty good so far, João Felix, again, in a vacuum, is a really exciting player. I'm really happy to see him in La Liga. I think he has a lot of upside, a lot of potential. So for you guys, I think given the expectations that after Godin left and Lucas left and Griezmann left, the feeling and the mood around Atletico was, what are we going to do next year? Like, how do we even survive this? How do we bounce back and become elite again? Is this just the end? This is the end of an era? I mean, obviously you kept Simeone, so like, he is the era, like definitively almost. So it couldn't be, but like, what is the plan? And if the plan was these signings, so you got Marcos Llorente, which we haven't even talked about today yet, which can't believe we've barely talked about him. Felipe, João Felix, Hector Herrera. Who was the left back you signed?
Renan Lodi.
Lodi. I mean, all these guys, it's like all of a sudden you went from that mood around Atletico to being kind of like just kind of somber to now it gets really exciting. And I think your ceiling is somewhere better than last year, whatever last year was. I think it's, and it's kind of weird to say that, but I think like in Europe, like you guys didn't really look that good apart from that first leg against Juve. And, you know, maybe like it depends. It really depends on how Simeone changes his playing style. Will it change at all? I don't know. But, you know, you're still a guaranteed pretty much top three team, and you can maybe be interchangeable with Real Madrid and Barcelona if the pieces fall your way and make a deeper run in the Champions League. It's possible. So like maybe a pretty high ceiling and higher than we anticipated.
I think the players that have come in, particularly Marcos Llorente and Hector Herrera, who we'll talk about, those are two guys in particular who are part of the larger, larger strategy that Atleti are bringing in players this summer who are more suited to Simeone's style than players who came in the past. Rodri is a very good example of this. Rodri came in last season and he had a wonderful campaign, but as we talked about last time you were on, he never was the perfect fit. Marcos Llorente could be a better fit in that sense. Not much better, but Marcos Llorente could be a better fit for this style. Hector Herrera came in on a free transfer from Porto, longtime Mexico international, really versatile player, can play in a holding role, can play in a box-to-box role, good passer, tough tackler, can score a goal every now and then. He's going to be a really valuable addition. I think as far as just viewing next season in a vacuum, Hector Herrera could be the most valuable addition that Atleti make this summer. He could be really quite good, depending on his role. And those are two guys who I think fit the Simeone mold. Renan Lodi as well, really super fast young fullback. Simeone has said in interviews last season that fullback is the most important position in football now. Kind of getting a little dig at Felipe Luis and Juan Fran for getting old and not playing so great anymore, but Atleti getting in a fullback with as much potential as Lodi and then going after Semedo as well sends a clear message. These are players who Simeone would like to mold and who already have a role in the system.
Yeah, and honestly, like, you mentioned Herrera. I think there's a question about it, so I don't want to jump the gun a bit, but I think like you still have a lot of midfield options, and I'm kind of curious to see what that looks like. And who will play and who will start and who will, you know, kind of what positioning. I think one of the reasons, and we talked a bit about this on the last podcast, but with Rodri, like Rodri at Villarreal was like a single pivot. He played the anchor role and that's what he was. And like at Atletico, you saw so much like of the 4-4-2. He was in double pivot. He had four central midfielders. And Marcos Llorente similarly is probably best in a single pivot in an anchor role. And I wonder if Simeone will recognize that or will just see that the 4-4-2 with which we've basically had been tortured to watch for 18 years now, it seems. So will he change that? I mean, that's something I'd be curious about.
Yeah. The formation, I think, is a really interesting question. We do have a question about it from at Monolith with three H's. Please do a provisional starting 11 and talk about Cholo's tactics and how they need to adapt to fit the team together. He also wants to know who should walk before the transfer window ends, and we'll get to that, I think, for both clubs. Provisional starting 11 is a good one, since the team is not really filled out yet. And Keon, I'll ask you the same thing for Real Madrid in just a second here, but it's going to be Oblak in goal, a right back of some sort, Jimenez. Right now, probably Felipe Montero, but Mauro Hermoso could still be coming in, and he would slot in next to Jimenez. As of now, Lodi at left back. I guess Santiago Arias would be the right back. I've still got it at 4-4-2, but I would really like to see a 4-2-3-1. I'd really like to see a 4-2-3-1, although the fits would be kind of interesting. You would have Marcos and probably Tomas in the double pivot. João Félix playing behind Alvaro Morata. The issue with the 4-2-3-1 is that you wouldn't really know where to put Koke and or Saul, which is probably why Cholo is going to stick with 4-4-2. Llorente.
Well, he just sticks them wherever anyway. It's like left wing, right wing.
Yeah, I'm expecting to see more Saul at left back this season. That's going to upset me. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. So you have Llorente and Saul in the middle, Koke, and then Tomas Lemar on the other wing. And then João Félix playing behind Morata or Diego Costa. It's going to be Morata, I think, starting from the opening kick.
Who was in your midfield again?
Llorente in this system, in this formation, Llorente and Saul with Koke and Lemar on the wings.
So you have Partey and Herrera out.
Yeah, Herrera's not going to be a consistent starter. With Tomas, his role is, for like the second year in a row, going to be unclear because he's now got four other CMs to contend with.
Yeah, I was curious to know what your answer about the midfield was in particular. Like the other pieces kind of pick themselves. Like if Hermoso comes in, he probably becomes a starter by default.
Yep.
But for now, like your lineup was like pretty expected from me. But the midfield, I wasn't sure what you would do. And when I thought about it, would probably have been something like, I'm just a huge Tomas fan, so maybe I kind of just hedged towards him a little bit, but I would have done like Marcos, Koke, Saul, Tomas, which again is pretty much four central midfielders, so Lamar kind of adds a little bit of more creativity in there.
And we're gonna see that quartet play. You know it. Simeone loves his central midfielders. You know we're gonna see that on multiple occasions, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean there's going to be, at some point, where he's probably going to like fit in like six central midfielders.
Yeah, yes.
It's coming.
Yeah, he'll play two of them up front. Yeah.
one in the back of the net, one in between the sticks. Oblak gets some rest, put in Koke in the middle.
Right. Yeah, don't put it past him. We'll pivot a little bit to Real Madrid now. What's your provisional starting 11 for next season with all your new signings, Keon?
Well, this is what I didn't really prepare for this, but I think I can go through it off the top of my head pretty well. The goalkeeper will probably be Courtois. Then you have Ramos and Varane, and then Carvajal. I think Zidane will start Mendy more than Marcelo, but I'm unsure of that one. If it was me, I'd go with Mendy and let Marcelo come into the team. But if it's a big game, I would like to see Mendy there. Then you would go And this part, the reason kind of this is difficult, Jeremy, is because we don't really know who our midfield's going to be next season. We don't. Yeah. We know someone is probably coming. We don't know who's going to be sold yet. So, like, right now we have Casemiro, Kroos, Modric, Isco. Really those four, because Ceballos is pretty much out the door. And so I don't really know how else to construct that. This is much more difficult to do than Atletico's, because there are a lot of unknowns. And Zidane has preferences, and some of his preferences may or may not be apparent yet. But, you know, based on the previous track record, Benzema probably plays. Hazard will play because of his price tag. I'm unsure about Vinicius. If it was me, I would have Vinicius in there. Why don't I answer this, Jeremy, by just saying what I want? And then you, and then Zidane can do whatever he wants. I would go Benzema and Jovic together with Hazard and Vinicius behind them. And then go with a double pivot in midfield of, at the moment, probably something like, I don't know, take your pick, I guess, out of Modric, Kroos, Casemiro. It would probably have to be Modric and my idea would be Modric and Kroos, but if you're going to double pivot, I don't know, Zidane may or may not want Casemiro there. In the past, he's played Casemiro on double pivot, so maybe he'll make it work. I think there was an interesting quote from Vinicius yesterday where he said, Hazard's arrival will make it difficult for me to get more playing time. And you know, that's like, I didn't expect him to publicly say that, but we all felt that way. Like, this is, they kind of occupy the same position. You can shuffle things around. But I would love to see a version of Real where both of those players play, because last season Vinicius was the only line-breaking presence we had. And so Hazard adds to that depth of giving two options for offensive creativity from those, you know, those wing positions. And I think that's really needed. Like, you can't just replace Vinicius with Hazard and just expect things to click and go into motion, because they won't, because you need more than one of those guys. You need someone to finish, you need someone to create. So I'd like to see both of them together. And, you know, outside of that, I still want to wait to see what our final midfield is before I can kind of properly assess what the starting lineup would be.
Yeah, relatable. Definitely relatable. Yeah. So Vinicius is going to have a dip in time, which, you know, for better or worse, that's what's going to happen with a player of Hazard's quality coming in. What other trickle-down effects could there be other than Hazard bumping Vinicius? You mentioned Mendy starting, or you would like to see Mendy starting ahead of Marcelo on more occasions. How long is Mendy going to stay behind Marcelo? Is he still the incumbent starter? Zidane does love him.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, like, we saw signs of life from Marcelo in the last few games of the season where the season was, like, long finished. And he was kind of playing well. Defensively, he still was a black hole. But, you know, offensively, he always pretty much was black hole. Even his peak, I remember going through so many columns and analysis. And, like, this guy just, he can't. At this point in his career, if he can't defend, he's never going to be able to. And he never did. Sometimes the effort was there and he still couldn't defend. Sometimes the effort wasn't there and that made it worse. This is who he is. But obviously, if he can't defend and he's not playing well offensively, then he's a complete zero. And that's why Reguilon was just a better upgrade than him last season. So if we get a version of Marcel that looked good at the end of the season, then that's a plus, because that's really the only way you can play him, is if he's creating offensively, he's putting crosses and he's dribbling past players, he's cutting in and shooting, he's being press resistant, all of that. So, but I think Mendy seems to be more ready now, and we kind of know that just because his season at Lyon was pretty damn incredible. So I would look at Mendy. The other, in terms of like dominoes and trickle effects, Jeremy, like what you asked about Hazard, basically Hazard and Vinicius, that dynamic, that changes a lot of things. Like, people will say, like, oh, you have Hazard and Vinicius on your left wing, then you have whoever on your right wing, whether it's Asensio, Brahim, Lucas Vazquez, Bale, whoever it is. But I don't think you can look at it that way. Like, people will say, like, these are different positions, but they are, but they're also roster spots. Like, they're starting 11 spots. So if you're playing Hazard and Vinicius together, that also takes away the right wing option, like, whoever that would be. Like, So where does Asensio play? Bale still, like, the longer this summer goes on, the more likely it is that maybe he just stays if no one can sign him.
Right.
So then you have all those players on that side who are not going to get playing time. So there's a lot of domino effects. I think it's less about, like, players. It's not about players playing the same position as someone else. It's about lineup, basically, spots that are available. For example, Benzema and Jovic are not the same player, but they're going to occupy a spot in the 11, one way or the other, and Zidane may opt for one or the other, even though they're not in the same position, because they're going to be a spot in the starting lineup. Like, I had someone on Facebook the other day, like, get upset that I said, we were talking about, who was it? Oh, man. Now I'm blanking. I'm going to bring this up. I'm going to find out and kind of bring it up before I finish my rant here. But basically, if, you know, we talked about this with Raul de Tomas and Mariano, two very, very good strikers, proven strikers, Mariano in Ligue 1 and Raul de Tomas, who was prolific with Rayo last season. And I'd love to see him with more talent around him, you know? But if, and I kind of made the case, like, one of them should maybe stay, because if Zidane wants to have a backup for Jovic without really kind of reshuffling the scheme, he could just put one of those guys there and get a less version of Jovic, but very capable attacker who can get on the end of crosses, can dribble, can make their own shot, could put pressure on defenders and become an aerial threat. But then the solution for Zidane is probably not even just replacing Jovic like for like if that situation arises. It's probably playing Benzema there as a false nine. It's kind of rejuggling the scheme. I mean, we saw this in 16-17 when Benzema came off the bench in big games, and when Zidane took him out, the solution wasn't Morata for him. It was putting Asensio there as a false nine. So that's what I mean. Like, all these positions, they're all interconnected, even though they're not exactly the same players playing in the same positions on the same wings. Those are roster spots that that are going to be taken up by different players, and you kind of have to figure that out. I mean, and maybe this problem won't be as big as a problem as we think it is, because we still have to see players get sold, and, like, we know that they're going to get sold because there's only 23 roster spots available, and Real Madrid right now, as of right now, I believe has 37.
Yikes!
By the way, that example I was talking about was Kovacic.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about Kovacic. And Raul de Tomas obviously just got sold yesterday, too, to Benfica.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the other one that kind of came in yesterday, too. Kind of snuck in. Not much noise about it, but it happened. We didn't really talk much about it. But the Kovacic thing was, I had said that Kovacic would, you know, re-signing for Chelsea. I think, like, you know, with Sarri gone, maybe Lampard can get the best out of him again, and he can become good again. And especially now that Ruben Loftus-Cheek is going to miss, like, a lot of the year,
right,
due to a really horrific injury. And someone was like, they don't play the same position, so they have nothing to do with each other. I was like, that's not how it works. They're both central midfielders. Whether you think they're different players and one of them should play deeper or higher up the pitch, doesn't matter. They're a roster spot. They're a starting 11 spot. And if one of them plays, the other one probably won't play, or you know, they're not connected in the way you think. So I just think, like, all of these positions, like, even with the defensive midfielder, like, with, you know, people say, like, who's the backup to Casemiro? Like, maybe Zidane is not even going to play with a defensive midfielder next season. So why then? That position just becomes redundant anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Kovacic is gone, RDT is gone, Teo Hernandez is gone. Who else? I mean, James is going to go. He's not coming to Atletico, by the way. That is a thing that is definitely not happening. Ceballos is going to go, possibly on loan, correct, with the buyback option?
Possibly, yeah. Tottenham was an interesting landing spot that I saw.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Couple more questions.
I don't know who else.
Couple more questions for you, Keon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, how much do you think Madrid can generate in transfer fees with all these outgoings, because you guys have already spent $300 million? How much can Real Madrid really get from selling?
Well, we got 45 for Kovacic, 30 for Marcos, 20 for Raul de Tomas. So that's almost 100 million right there.
Yeah.
Which helps. You know, if Bale goes, whatever that is,
you're gonna get 40, added to it. You're gonna get 40 for James, probably.
Yeah, around there for James, and then I saw a report today that Unai Emery wants Lucas Vazquez for, and Real Madrid want 30 million. Maybe that if that fee hovers around 25 to 30 million, that's pretty damn good for him.
Yeah, definitely. And Zidane's gonna try to keep him from going no matter what. He loves Lucas Vazquez.
Right. If Isco gets sold, I don't know if he gets sold or not. Zidane seems to like him, but if he does, and I made this point with Matt on the last Managing Madrid podcast, in that if Real Madrid buy another midfielder, then that really puts Isco in a tough place where I think he's too good to come off the bench, and already the spots are limited. So if you throw in another midfielder, that whoever it is, if they get him, he's probably a starter because they're probably going to be pay big bucks for him. Then Isco gets further down the depth chart. So what incentive does he have to stay? And if Real Madrid sell him, they'll probably get a decent fee from him as well. So that's another player I'd look at in terms of being able to generate, because I think he's in his peak, and if he gets sold, I think it should be for a decent amount.
Yeah, because we forget, because Isco didn't play much last year. Isco's a really good player.
Yeah, and not old or anything. Like, you know, he's 27.
He's 27.
Got a lot of good years left ahead of him, so.
And he was central to the 2016-17 Madrid team, which remains one of the best teams I've ever watched. He was central to everything that team did. I did want to ask about Eder Militao. He's one of the more fascinating signings that you guys have made. He was dominant at Porto last season alongside Felipe Montero, who's signed for Atleti, was presented yesterday. With Ramos and Varane clearly entrenched as the starters still, and Nacho's still around, what do you see his role being this coming season?
Very important. I don't know exactly what his minute distribution will look like, but I think we'll see Ramos get more rest than he's ever had before. He's turning 34, and you know, we've seen Zidane in the past kind of strategically rest Ronaldo like ahead of time. He'll be like, okay, this is the game you're resting.
Right.
He's done the same with Modric in order for these guys to be fresh in April. So I assume Militao will play a lot. And that's just talking about rest. And that doesn't include all the red card suspensions that Ramos will have and all the card suspensions he'll have. The injuries Varane will have, which he always has.
Right.
Unfortunately, quite a few injuries. Been better lately, the past few years, but he'll have them. And also, Nacho has become less and less reliable in the last year or so.
Yeah, so, Nacho could go too, honestly.
Nacho is another name that could go, yeah. Vallejo, by the way, a great under-21 tournament, so that was encouraging.
Good and to see him stay healthy.
What's that?
Really good to see him stay healthy, too.
Yeah, and if he does, hopefully he does, then I'm liking our depth chart at center back next season. I didn't like it so much this season because of Vallejo's injuries and Nacho's form.
Well, anything can be better than last season.
Yep, you guys. Pretty much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but that's just me talking.
Well, it's not like you guys lit Europe on fire either, so.
It's amazing. I was thinking about this yesterday or the day before. The Super Cup was arguably Atleti's best performance of last season, and that took place in August. So, not exactly
so it was basically
year.
Like what happened to Real Madrid in 16-17 when they beat Barca in the Super Cup, and that was like they never really hit that level again for the rest of the year.
Yeah, the Super Cup was like the most exciting game Atletico played last season, other than the first leg against Juventus, which was a great, great performance. It's kind of blunted by what happened in the second leg when, you know, just terrible things happened. Do you see Jovic and Benzema playing together at all? I think they're a little incompatible, but can you see Zidane doing that at all?
Yeah, I do. I think because Benzema's such a versatile player that he's not really obviously a pure striker, and he can do so much more, and he linked up so well with Vinicius, and I think for that reason he'll link up well with Hazard as well. But I think he'll be able to actually generate quite a few chances for Jovic. And Jovic is such an elite finisher last season anyway in the small sample size we had, that, you know, that was the void Real Madrid were missing last season. I mean, they have many voids, but one of the big ones is obviously just putting the ball in the back of the net. So, yeah. Assuming Zidane feels that way, which I'd be surprised if he doesn't, Jovic, I think, plays quite a bit. And knowing how much he likes Benzema and how well Benzema played last year, although you could definitely ask more from him in big games, those two, I think, would work. See, and the interesting thing about it, Jeremy, is that Benzema is a kind of a player that likes to hug the left side quite a bit. And so that makes it also complicated because that's, you know, you can fit Vinicius there, you can fit Hazard there, but if you know all three of those guys kind of drifting to the left, I think it's just going to be interesting to see how that dynamic unfolds.
Sure.
Which is why I think out of the two, out of Vinicius and Hazard, Hazard is the more likely to play more centrally or on the right. Because he is capable of like kind of that free roaming role, that kind of like number 10 role that Isco played at the spearhead of the diamond in 16-17. Hazard is, I think, can play that role. So that would give Vinicius more freedom on the left. And that would kind of just help the team's offense shape up a little bit and stretch it out a little bit.
Sure. Couple more questions and then we'll sign off here. At Flor del Culo on Twitter, interesting handle. If we can get more than half the players on a starting team for Atleti be La Fabrica products, can we name Atletico to Real Madrid Castilla? Funny. Very funny. No, I think it's interesting, though. I think that's a good point to raise, Keon, is that Atleti have kind of made it part of the strategy to sign ex-Real Madrid players, ex-academy players, ex-first team players. We saw... we've seen guys like Antonio Adan, who's not a major player, but he came in last summer. And this calendar year, we've seen Alvaro Morata come in despite his past. Marco Llorente come in despite his past. It's not like Atleti are picking off the scrap heap, but Atletico are recognizing that these guys, despite their past, they're still very good players, and they're unwanted. So why not go after them?
You could extend that list if you really wanted to Juan Fran,
yep,
and Saul, who... people kind of forget, because I don't even think he ended up playing a single game for Castilla, but he was part of Castilla 1 year. And
he left due to bullying.
Yeah, he was bullied, apparently. Not apparently, I think he was bullied. So I don't know if it's intentional, Jeremy, but if it is, why not? Because I remember, you know, and I'm reading a book right now, it's The Duelist. It's about Pep and Jose Mourinho's reign. And there was a whole section about it, about this, where Mourinho at Inter made it a point to sign Eto'o because he was a disgruntled Barca player.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that if he went against Barca in the Champions League, you put all these pieces together, like, you know, they're going to fight in that game like crazy. And it's not crazy. If that was intentional, I don't think it's a bad ploy. Really, Morata, frustrated player, obviously. He scored a goal against us that was claimed offside, right?
Yep.
There was like a whole stretch where Morata was scoring offside goals like twice a game, and that was one of them was against us, I think.
Yeah.
Marcos Llorente, again, another player who, on the surface, may not show that he was frustrated because he's like kind of like this seems like this fun-loving guy who's always laughing and. But I'm sure deep down it was frustrating for him because he worked really hard both in the gym and on the pitch and played well and just didn't get anything outside of Solari. So I'm sure he'll be fired up too. So it's not a bad play. I still think, like, I wonder if Llorente wasn't available this summer and they lost Rodri. They kind of got lucky that the replacement was Llorente. Maybe in any other year it would be more difficult to replace Rodri.
Yeah, true. Llorente was there, readily available. Again, different kind of player, but maybe a better fit for a Simeone system because of he doesn't really need the ball as much as Rodri. He's not going to slow play down like Rodri did, and he can still add in those defensive responsibilities.
Yeah.
One last Twitter question about filling out Atletico's attack. Are we expected to see one more signing in attack? Is there any truth to rumored interest about Alexander Lacazette? Do Costa and Correa stay? What about Tomas Lemar? I don't know anything about Lacazette. I know there was the radio report that he's in some kind of negotiations with the Spanish team. I doubt it's Atletico, because remember, that deal was done to bring Lacazette in 2 years ago, but then Atleti had that pesky transfer ban and the deal collapsed. He was also...
Who else would it be, though? If it's a Spanish team, I'm saying. Because it's not Real Madrid, it's not Barcelona, and any other team, with all due respect, is probably too small for him.
I mean, possibly Valencia, if they get money for Rodrigo, but Valencia are just about to sign Maxi Gomez, which is a great signing for them. Oh, my God.
If you guys get Lacazette, like, your summer is incredible. That is the one thing that you're missing. And then you could have Morata off the bench. Forget about Diego Costa. He shouldn't be prioritized at this point. But if you get Lacazette, that instantly makes you guys way more interesting.
It definitely would be intriguing. It really would. Really complete the striker core. But I don't think Atleti are in the market for another one. There's not an expectation, but an anticipation that Costa bounces back next season. Simeone certainly seems to believe it. I am a bit more hesitant. There aren't any offers for Costa. He's going to stay. Tomas Lemar is going to stay. He's going to be given at least one more season, considering the investment Atleti put into him. And Correa is the most interesting case of that trio. I think he's likely going to stay, but there is a chance he leaves. He was disappointing last season, to say the least. He was disappointing. Really took a step back in his development. And he could still go if the right offer comes in. Again, more likely than not, he stays. But we'll see. Atletico are going to make a couple more sales, or a couple more exits are likely. Nikola Kalinic is almost certain to go. Vitolo is on the block as well, possibly on an initial loan. But yeah, Atleti still have a few more exits, a few more sales to make. So we'll see.
Diego Costa is only 30. He plays like he's 36. I literally thought he was 34. 30 is not that old.
No, it's not.
Crazy, how much last year he fell off.
Yeah, he turns 31 in October, and he looks much older than 30, up 31. It's tough, but he's an obvious bounce back candidate, even though. Judging from his play last season, it was just hard. It's hard to see, considering.
Yeah, and he's probably a good person to have in the locker room.
Yeah, Simeone loves him. He gets fired up very easily. He's going to miss the first week of the season, finishing out his suspension for his antics at Camp Nou.
But bit of a harsh punishment, if you ask me.
It was a bit understandable, but the dueling 4-game suspension is probably a little bit. They tried to make an example out of him, I think, in some ways. Yeah. But, yeah, he's a bounce-back candidate. I think Morata is the starter to begin the season, but Costa is going to play a heavy role because Simeone still believes in him.
Mm.
So, going to be interesting stuff, Keon. You got anything to plug before we sign off?
I don't know if... Well, on Manage Madrid, we have a lot going on, a lot of articles, a lot of columns from various writers, and a lot of video analysis. You know, we have a YouTube channel called School of Real Madrid where we do video analysis. We did a scouting report on Luka Jovic. We did a video about Eden Hazard's tactical fit. We'll be doing other ones on Ferland Mendy. And also, we obviously have the Managing Madrid podcast. So if you Colchoneros are interested... Please swing by. And if any Colchoneros are interested in meeting us, we're actually doing a live podcast in New York City on July 28th. And details about that are on the site that you can just go in and meet us. And you can feel free to throw objects at us if you want, if you want to show your Colchonero colors. But if not, come hang out with us and meet us.
Keon Silvani, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Colchonero Chat.
Anytime, man. Thanks, Jeremy.
Follow Keon on Twitter at KeonSo. That is KeyanSo. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBaron. Follow Managing Madrid at Managing Madrid. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. You can like both blogs on Facebook. Facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon is our site's Facebook link. You can subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Chat on your favorite podcasting platform. Become a Colchonero Chat amigo at patreon.com/Colchonero Chat, and we'll see you next week. Adios.